Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/Green Festival.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Jason Kelly. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Bloomberg Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, only on Bloomberg Radio.
I am determined to do all I can to secure the reassurances this House requires to get this deal over the line and deliver for the British people.
And that is, of course, Prime Minister Theresa May of the United Kingdom addressing Parliament earlier this morning. What we didn't hear was all the jeers and the shouting.
It's tough.
That really makes that experience unique, certainly, versus what we see here in the United States. John Authors is senior editor at Bloomberg Markets. We called him in to ask about his homeland and what's happening over there. It's been something we know you've watched very closely, John. Yeah. Great to be with you.
Thanks.
So, put on your multiple hats and tell us what to make of all of what we saw this morning out of London.
Well, as a normal British person, I really like to get back to talking about things like Shakespeare and the Beatles.
normal British things about Britain that are actually
really good rather than this ongoing national humiliation. It's really, really bad, evidently. Theresa May could have hoped for better in terms of the response than she got. I mean, don't read too much into the amount of yelling and heckling and stuff. That's good old-fashioned parliamentary democracy at work. But it doesn't appear as though anybody is impressed by her professed reasons for delaying the vote, which is that she's going to go back to Europe for another round of negotiations. There might be some very minor piece of paper, some assurance or something they might give her. At this point, it's been okayed by all the other governments. It would be very difficult indeed for them to offer her anything substantively better. I can therefore understand the annoyance of even some relatively supportive MPs, and obviously the annoyance of the markets, that really all she's doing is treading water and hoping and trying to buy some time. She's not going to get anything that would change the mind of anybody currently planning to vote against her deal.
What's the point, John, then? If it doesn't change the outcome, if nothing new is going to come of this, does a breather help her in any ways politically?
It looks as though it does not. I guess the calculation she is making, and this may be hopeful or it may be accurate, is that at this point, a lot of people really are prepared to do, for the Thelma Louise option and to drive over the cliff. And this might give them a few more days to really stew in their own juice and think whether that really makes sense. She genuinely believes that if Britain is going to leave the EU on anything like the kind of terms or with any kind, anything like the kind of advantages that people had in mind when they voted to leave, this is the best it's going to be. That's plainly, I think she does sincerely believe that.
Can I ask you something? Can we get a new referendum? Could we go back there?
Yes, we could. I mean, this is, you know, Britain doesn't have a constitution. We're making this up constantly as we go along. You could have a second referendum, or a third, if actually, as there was also a referendum on this way back in 1975, when it would have been much easier to leave. That is an argument that is being put by a number of people, full disclosure, including some of my former work colleagues from my previous existence at the Financial Times, who are now politicians, on both Conservative and Labour stripe. The issue I have with it, I, at a principled level, wanted to stay in the EU and would be only too happy to be given a chance to vote for that again. The problem is the polls might suggest that there is a move in favour of staying, but it's not a very strong one. If the polls were saying people have changed their minds, it's now going to be 7:30 to remain, then we would do it. At the moment, if we get another 52-48, but the other direction, that means 48% of the electorate will really be steaming mad for the foreseeable future. I mean, if you think what kind of problems the Macron is in with the Gilets Jaunes at the moment, imagine what that 48% of the people is going to feel like. And when you add to that that it's going to take a lot more time, it takes time to organise a referendum, decide what the question is. You probably have to delay Britain's departure anyway and pile on the agony with the markets. So at a principle level, I badly disagreed with this decision, would like to go back on it if we can. But I'm extremely anxious that I'm not sure I would do it if I were Theresa May, and I'm not sure I would invest in British assets if I got that news as an international investor.
Well, and it's clear, and you know, you look so closely at the entire globe, and you mentioned President Macron dealing with his own sort of elements of populism. You look at what's happening in this country, and if we were to revote the 2016 presidential election, maybe it goes slightly the other way. But to your point, you still have half of this country, half of the UK, half of many countries very divided. Got to ask you before we let you go about this Huawei situation and how much that is weighing on either the trade talks or the market in general.
I'm not sure it's weighing on the market that much, because if you look at the companies that are doing badly today, it's financials and oil, and I'm not really sure that either of those are most drastically affected by the Huawei news. Tech is actually up for the day at the moment here in the States.
Right.
One sector that did intrigue me when I looked it up, if you look at the topics, we've got bad news from Japan, Japanese stocks are not doing well. The worst sector by far in Japan is marine transport, down 40% from the top. So that sounds like a leading indicator of trade to me.
Trade.
Doing very badly.
Yeah. Absolutely. John Arthur, senior editor of Bloomberg Markets. He is a prolific columnist, a must follow.
Last dance with Mary Jane. One more time to kill the pain.
You knew that was coming.
So Mary Jane, very cute. The next company, ETF we're talking about, the ticker is MJ. It takes stakes in companies that invest in the cannabis industry, about $700 million in assets under management. And the ETF, it's down about 13% year-to-date, but up 12% from its August low. Jason Wilson is in the house, president of Budding Equity Asset Management. Great name. He's partner in the MJ ETF and based in Toronto, but in our Bloomberg Interactive broker studio on this Monday. Nice to have you here. Welcome.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about the market. And when you guys are looking to invest in particular companies, what are you looking for? Is there enough out there in the universe that you can kind of pick and choose as you see?
Well, we're not an active fund. We're just a passive fund. So we follow an index, number one. And our universe is getting larger and larger and larger. It's been a great run this year. We've seen a bunch of things happening, from Epidiolex being approved by the FDA. That was a big one. Obviously, the Constellation Brands investment in Canopy. And then most recently, the Altria investment in Cronos. So it's becoming bigger, mainstream, more global, and a lot more companies to include in our fund.
So talk to us about the breakdown that comes given that so much of this is based on the federal legalization in Canada. You have some state-by-state stuff obviously going on here in the United States, but still illegal at a federal level. How much sort of risk is there in that? How much is that going to slow down the growth that we've seen so far?
So, you know, with respect to the fund, we only invest in companies that are not in violation of U.S. federal law. So that's number one. So we
Smart.
Don't. Yeah, it's a good thing when you're SEC regulated fund.
Note
it
to
helps.
Self.
Yeah.
Elon Musk, notwithstanding, in his respect or lack thereof for the SEC. Go on.
It's interesting. At various investor conference, people are like, am I going to go to jail if I invest? We're like, no, probably not. At least not for buying a NYSE listed ETF. But. No, we do. That's one of our key criteria, is to look at companies that are operating, you know, within proper federal regimes and guidelines. So the majority of our stocks are Canadian, but it does have a global outreach. And it's the Canadian market is relatively small. The global market is much bigger. If you look at there's over 40 countries right now that have either legalized marijuana for medical purposes or in the process of doing so. And then with respect to the U.S., a lot of these Canadian companies that are in our fund, like Canopy, like Kronos, like Aurora, they are actually making contingent investments in U.S. assets.
Right.
So it's either locking up greenhouse space or it's maybe providing, call it contingent equity through warrants or whatnot, that would give them full-blown ownership upon federal legalization. So there's still... you know, at least there's some kind of connection to the U.S. as well as the market expands down here.
For the success of the industry, is it going to ultimately be consolidated to a few key players? Is that how you see it playing out?
I think that's going to play out to some degree. I mean, there's going to be your large Amazon or Google, so to speak, and right now that looks to be Canopy in large part.
Yeah.
But everyone
and certainly
else,
is the case if you ask Canopy.
Well, absolutely.
We're going to talk to them later. Yeah.
Oh, great.
Later on.
Oh, they've done a great job. Well, you know, they have a great war chest, a ton of cash. They're making some really smart moves in the space, and you know, so we're big fans. But you know, there's other players that are coming and taking up little kind of niche spots. So you know, the Green Organic Dutchman's a good example. They've gone with the Whole Foods, if you will, of the industry, and they figure that'll give them. They'll let the big guys fight it out for the rest. They want that little niche of the market.
Jason, do we yet know which niche of the market is going to be the highest, I guess, grower, the biggest grower? Is it the medical side? Is it recreational? Is it consumer products, makeup, something like that? I mean, do we really have a handle? I know it's...
No, it's too early innings to really see. There's definitely a lot of enthusiasm for the adult use recreational side.
Yeah.
Globally, medical is huge. I mean, we know that. We're seeing more of that. There's kind of step below that is the wellness part. And
right.
That's where you're getting a lot of the CBD kind of products in there. And then there's, you know, there's just the consumer products. There will be some of that as well. And then obviously there'll be industrial application too, similar to hemp.
And it is interesting. You know, we have had a number of people come through, and that beauty piece, Peter Horvath, mm-hmm. Is someone, used to work at L Brands. We've had him on the show a couple of times. He's really talking that bit up quite a bit. And we should mention, as Carol alluded to, Bruce Linton, the CEO of Canopy, going to be joining us later on this show.
Just one last question, 30 seconds. What kind of money keeps flowing in?
A fair amount. We've pulled in about $650 million assets year to date, which isn't surprising. I mean, there's been a lot going on in the space.
Is it slowing at all?
No, not at all. It's slowed off, but I have to say, very uniquely, even with the correction in the market recently, we haven't had any redemptions in the fund whatsoever. We keep bringing in, issuing new shares.
What types of investors, briefly?
Mostly retail.
Retail.
Absolutely.
Jason Wilson is president of Budding Equity Asset Management, partner in the MJ ETF. Definitely a space to watch and an ETF to worth paying attention to.
There's so much activity going on. There is some, you know, purchases, consolidation. It is fascinating to kind of see what's going on.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Who is that?
I don't know what.
ZZ Top.
ZZ Top singing about burgers. It makes sense.
But not on my playlist.
But not on your playlist. That's not surprising. You're more of a Phantom of the Opera person.
I know. I am.
David Lee is here with us. He is Chief Operating Officer and Chief Financial Officer of Impossible Foods. They, of course, are the maker of the award-winning Impossible Burger. It's a plant-based burger. And it bleeds. And that's how people know it. But so much more going on in the plant-based food industry. David, great to have you back with us. Really nice to have you.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So what's going on out there? Because I do feel like since the last time we talked to you, I mean, you've hit something of an inflection point, clearly hit a nerve, as it were. And the world is sort of moving your way. Why?
Well, I think consumers for a long time have been desperately looking for craveable meat, really craveable meat. That also doesn't create so many of the compromises they see in the world. And we've gone back in July of 2016 with our single customer, David Chang at Momofuku, to now being at over 5,000 locations nationwide.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and 100 locations in Hong Kong and Macau. You know, Asia's 40% of the global meat market. So we're seeing a global phenomenon here. We're seeing a consumer movement that we've just begun to fulfill.
So as you're growing, what's the, obviously upside is great to see growth. What's the downside as you kind of manage that growth?
For us, it's really important that as we expand our supply to these meat eaters, we do it in an extremely thoughtful, high quality way. We intend never to run out when we start a great opportunity. And it's actually an example of us being able to expand beyond the normal core meat eater. The new news of the day is that we're halal, along with being kosher, as of a month ago. And so we intend to serve every meat eater, even those with religious dietary restrictions.
Well, what I also find so interesting is when you look at where the growth is coming from, it's not just, candidly, the Momofukus of the world. You know, it is really a much broader, you're in stadiums, arenas, places like that. So clearly, and that's the question we asked, we were joking before we came on air that, you know, we love to talk about different trends, especially in fitness and wellness and whatnot. But so much of that seems to be relegated to the very affluent, you know, the people who are either especially well-educated or candidly, you know, have more disposable income to pay up for the higher end.
Yeah, you know, it's a great point. We have been really excited to see, for example, you know, we launched chain-wide at White Castle. And there, that fast food consumer, oftentimes in urban locations, is not just looking for great food. They're looking for food that makes sense for the lifestyle they live. So there you can get, you know, an Impossible slider for less than $2. These are not the fine dining coastal consumers. These are the Midwestern, inner city, urban consumers of fast food.
Mass market.
It's mass market. And I think what we're seeing is that this consumer movement for meat eaters to want something better pre-existed us. What may be new, we hope, is that we might be the one that actually hits the craveability mark. And as a result, tap into something that's really been quite big.
What might surprise someone about the trends that we're seeing in the plant-based food market? Because I was looking at some of the numbers, the market size. I mean, sales of plant-based foods growing about 20% over last year. And the number of new plant-based food and beverage products worldwide increasing 62% between 2013 and 2017. It's still a relatively smaller market, right?
Right.
But it's growing.
It's growing. And that market is great.
And optionality is growing.
Yeah. And we welcome plant-based eaters. But I got to tell you, the more surprising thing for your listeners is that our growth has been a multiple of that, a very large multiple of that, because something like 78% of the consumers that are coming back for the Impossible Burger are not plant-based. They're hardcore meat eaters. They want to eat meat every week. It's a part of their lives. So I think the new news is that it's not just about those who are growing from a plant-based standpoint. It's meat eaters who are demanding more and more product that they happen to get from us made out of plants.
I'm interested in your background as well. You worked at Zynga and, you know, you worked at Del Monte. So, you know, you have all these elements of both sort of the food world and candidly coming up with what makes a hit, you know, a fickle consumer.
I certainly can't claim the hit. What I can claim is that the oddities of being in advertising and in finance and at Del Monte and in tech have helped me kind of look at problems differently. And it's a credit to Pat and the R&D team at Impossible that they gave us a product where we were allowed to look at it from a business standpoint and say, maybe we can break all the rules with this one in terms of how we go to market.
So in terms of going to market, you mentioned White Castle. So is a McDonald's or a Burger King soon to follow? I mean, when we really talk about mass market, I feel like that's the thing. You know, are you in Costco? Are you like what? You know, give me an idea.
Well, I think what you'll see next year is you will see us in retail. I can't wait for the home chef to take our product and see that it can be rare, well done. It can be a meatloaf. It can be, you know, pasta. You'll see us in more markets globally. I think we've announced that we'll be in Singapore beyond Hong Kong and Macau. And, you know, great companies like the ones you mentioned, these very large at scale quick service chains, they are smart about what the consumer is demanding. And I think you're seeing signs the consumer is demanding from them as well. Meat without compromise. So I hope to be able to talk about that.
Boy, that sounded like a little
year.
Bit of a tease.
Yeah, deep tease. So when we think about any product like this, and especially given the names that Carol just mentioned and you alluded to, you worry about, you know, how deep is your moat, you know, and if they're how easy would it be, how defensible is your business against someone who says, wow, this is really catching on. I'm going to essentially come up with my maybe possible burger.
We absolutely care about having the best product with the best brand, which in the end, even though we are the only ones with the global patent that can use the one thing Mother Nature created to make meat taste like meat, in the end, it's about quality and brand. Having said that, we think this is a $1.5 trillion global market. We need new
burgers?
Entrants. No, well, you know, our technology actually serves way beyond the burger.
Yeah.
It's all of beef, pork,
right.
Chicken, fish, dairy.
Yeah.
So we welcome new competitors. We hope that they can hit that craveability mark because the opportunity is very large.
Can you do it alone?
We think we can, but we're
beyond
open to
partnerships,
having partners.
Which we know you're already I'm just saying above and beyond that.
We are self-reliant. You know, a mission like ours, a business opportunity like ours, we can't bet that anybody will help us. That said, it's gravy and upside if there are credible partners for us to do this with.
Well, and obviously you've got some big name investors, not the least of which is Bill Gates, who knows a thing or two about building a big business. And you yourself have some experience in the private equity world as well. It would feel like there's a lot of institutional investor demand out there.
There is. You know, we've actually benefited from raising over $450 million in the last 18 months. And they really now include global multinational institutions like Temasek, Viking Global, and others, who would be wonderful as public investors as well as private. And so we are operating at that level of rigor these days.
I just think a lot of the food companies that are out there who are trying to, you know, adapt to ever-changing tastes by consumers have got to be looking at these alternatives. We see them doing it. They've done it in the beverage market, and they've got to be looking at certainly very closely what you guys are doing. David Lee, always good to catch up. Come back in a few months and let us know how things are going. I want to know about these other partnerships,
yeah,
maybe. David Lee is Chief Operating Officer, Chief Financial Officer at Impossible Foods, based in Redwood City, California, in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio here in New York City on this Monday.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's going to drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
Just drive, baby.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
It is time for the Drive to the Close, first trading day of the week. And with us, back with us, is Henley Smith, Vice President at Stonecastle Cash Management. $14 billion in assets under management in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio on this Monday. Nice to have you back with us.
Well, thanks for having me in.
Looking rather casual.
I try.
In his corduroys.
I try. A little festive.
Yeah, I love
exactly.
It.
I don't have a Christmas tie on or a holiday
tie. What happened to the Santa Claus rally?
Hey, maybe it's still there. We've got a couple more weeks left. How many more shopping days till Christmas?
Yeah,
or trading days, I should say.
Well, what do you make of this market environment?
I know. I think the watch phrase and the watch word for us has been, you know, preservation of principle with value.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the first time in a long time, and exciting for a guy like me who's been operating in the short part of the fixed income curve for a long time. But, you know, this is a long time since we've seen short bonds pay cash in particular.
Yeah.
So at 2% plus with cash, I think a lot of people, you know what, let's close the books and let's sit in cash and let's let it play out at this point. So yeah, a lot of cross currents in here.
And are you hearing other folks who maybe aren't always so bullish on that strategy come into
oh,
that?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Absolutely, totally. I mean, I think you've seen a lot of financial press, you name it, saying, you know, cash has been the big winner of 2018. And my guess is that cash will probably be a winner in 2019. You know, expectations that the Fed will move next week. I mean, a little bit of maybe in doubt for some, but my guess is that the Fed will move. The market is expecting it. I think if they don't move, they could be sending a more dire signal. So I think at this point, the Fed has to lead and will lead next week. And I think at that point, cash continues to be an asset allocation that makes sense. It went from accommodation to asset allocation.
Yeah, it is interesting. I am curious. So you're seeing a fair amount of flows into cash specifically.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think...
And I'm assuming out of equities into cash, or yeah. Not necessarily.
Well, I think long bonds have, you know, people were shortening up all year. And, you know, and I think that continued to be the case. So I think that continues on. Maybe that's slowed down a little bit because, you know, the 10-year rallied from here from its high of 320 or a couple weeks back. A lot of out of equity and into cash. As I said, it's a place that most people don't want to hide. I would think probably most wealth managers would say the cash is a wealth destroyer. You don't want to be in cash long term. I would agree. But I think at this particular juncture, be it strategic, tactical, whatever, being in cash makes a lot of sense.
I like one of the notes that you provided before you came on. You talked about baby black swans.
Exactly.
I love that idea.
Well, you know, again, I think last time I was here, we were talking about what's going to be the next thing that kind of knocks the market off. What's the next black swan? And I think probably what you've seen is kind of a series of little baby black swans, maybe cygnets, as they call it, I think.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, from tweets to trade to whatever it might be, you know, it's really been keeping the market on its toes. And I think for that reason, a lot of people have said, you know what? Let's protect principle. Let's just stay safe. And I think that's where we're at right now.
It's an interesting note, too, because I feel like so many days we come in here, and even when there is a big market sell-off, it's not and we sort of watch, you know, we sort of watch our colleagues on the Market Live blog or even seeing what our colleagues across Bloomberg News are producing. And there's no clear theme of, all right, it was trade. It was... tariffs or trade, or it was tech, or it was whatever. It's all these little
things. It's been these little black swans that have hit us since the beginning of October. Usually October, it goes away by this time, and you know, Santa Claus rally kicks in, but for some reason it's been hanging on a little bit longer than people have expected. And I think that, again, I think that's because the consensus has been so crowded. You know, the Fed's been very transparent here. People have been positioning that. But when you have these wings of volatility, it kind of really heightens it a little bit because the consensus has been so crowded.
But there's also been a conversation, Henley, about people kind of waking up and realizing, okay, we're in a different rate environment. We're not high by historic means, not even close in terms of federal rate increases or Federal Reserve increases in interest rates, but it's a move, a continuing move higher.
Yeah, I think
that's been a different trend.
Yeah, I think there's been a little sticker shock here. I mean, you see it in the housing market in particular, where housing has slowed because mortgage rates have moved up. I think that there's a little sticker shock. I think that's really a function of where we've been for the last 10 years, where people have gotten so used to zero interest rates. And maybe the Fed, as in my opinion, you know, overstayed that strategy a little bit too long and got people hooked on the fact that, you know, interest rates should be zero. When I borrow, it should be zero. And now that we're getting back to a more neutral level, a more historic level of where interest rates have been historically, from that zero rate, it looks like sticker shock.
And so do you think this cash play lasts through 19?
Yeah, as a cash manager, I certainly hope so. I do. I think my estimation is we've been waiting for this second shoe to drop since 2010. And for that reason, a lot of people have been allocating to cash just more than they have been in the past.
And when you say shoe drop, you mean just the market taking a more permanent leg down?
I would think so, yeah. Something a little bit more permanent. Right? You know, we've been buying the dips and it's been worked. And this is the first time I think I've read that people aren't buying the dips so much. So, but up until this point, buying the dip has certainly been a winning strategy, and maybe that's changing a little bit because interest rates are starting to move up.
Yeah, it is interesting too that I am curious about. You know, we talked a lot about the inversion, or at least part of the yield curve last week.
Yes.
Was that significant in your view?
Not really. I think it's a little bit of a noisy thing. It was twos, fives. It's still inverted right now. I think the driving force is going to be twos, 10-year notes. If that inverts, then I think people will be concerned. Certainly. Because the inverted yield curve has been a great predictor of recessions for the last how many years. So I think just for that reason, it's been case. But the caveat I put out again is coming from zero interest rates and the high level of accommodation we've had, how does that change that dynamic?
Henley Smith, Senior Relationship Manager over at Stonecastle Cash Management, overseeing about $14 billion here with us in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio. It's funny to see, you know, sort of which strategies start to come to the fore after literally years of sort of seeing the same thing. And I think back to the conversations we've had with Peggy Collins and others about the hedge fund world and who's winning. I mean, this is the sort of market that starts to shake things out little bit.
And you see people moving into cash or, if, you know, at the shorter end of the yield curve in terms of treasuries, because at this point you get some yield, but you take out some of the risk, which is you're seeing often in the equity side of things. And this is another theme and story that we've been covering a lot of.
All right. So can I just mention what I know we're getting toward the close of trading, but this story just came across and I am blown away by it. There's a wedding in India.
I love this story.
Daughter of Asia's richest man to wed India tycoon's son, a wedding that could cost $100 million.
We call it the Real Crazy Rich Asian Wedding, based off of that, or playing off of that movie.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com. You can also listen to our radio show every weekday at 2 p.m. Eastern, only on Bloomberg Radio.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Hi, I'm Ron Kruszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, let's face it, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. There's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.